Well, joining us now in the studio is Virginia Governor and Democrat Terry McAuliffe. He's with us in the studio because today and tomorrow, Boston is hosting a regional summit of the National Governors Association. McAuliffe is NGA chairman, and the summit is focusing on cybersecurity, how states should enhance cybersecurity practices, their cyber workforces, and also on improving election infrastructure. We'll talk about all of that and, of course, a little bit about the election itself. Governor McAuliffe, welcome to Radio Boston.
Great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
I first wanted to start by asking you about a story that broke just last Friday about hackers having targeted voter registration systems of more than 20 states.
Yeah.
And those states are requesting assistance from the Department of Homeland Security. I mean, is that evidence enough that states are targets for hackers? I mean, should we be worried about the effect they may have on the election?
Well, clearly, we've sent a notice out to all the states. I gave a speech today. I serve as chairman of the National Governors Association. My initiative is cybersecurity. We need to protect our citizens' information. We need to protect our voting data. So I've just finished a top-to-bottom review in Virginia. But I said to the governors today, everybody needs to go through this process. Look at this week. I mean, Yahoo was hacked by 500 million names were hacked. You look at General Powell. His personal account was hacked. Every day you're reading stories about businesses, individuals. So what we're trying to do is get all 50 states up to snuff. We in Virginia, we're at the top of the country on protecting our data. But we can be doing a great job, but if some other state somewhere else isn't doing anything, we have the same health care provider. They can get to Virginia by going through a back door of another state who is not putting up the protection. So all 50 states need to do this.
So we'll talk about more about that in just a second, but help me out here. I mean, should we be concerned about these hacks on voter registration systems in states? Could it have any impact on the election?
You know, I don't think it will. I can tell you in Virginia, we have no evidence of it, but we're everybody needs to be concerned. I mean, Donald Trump is talking about Russia coming over, and you know, he's encouraged him to come over and hack into Hillary's emails. I mean, goodness gracious. Not likely, but I do think it's a precaution. They've been stealing data from individuals, from businesses. I mean, as you know, you've seen some major breaches already in this country. Talk to Target, talk to Sony Pictures. Talk to Anthem. Hundreds of thousands of people's individuals' information was taken. So, you know, we need to stay on top of it. And that's the goal of this conference here in Boston, to get all 50 states to come together. You're only as strong as your weakest link. And all 50 states, we have so much financial data and health records in our states as governors. We got to make sure we're protecting those assets.
Okay, so talk to me in some detail then. What are the top, you know, one or two things that every governor ought to be doing to protect that data that's held in, you know, state servers?
That's a great question. Number one, every governor should be doing a top-to-bottom review of their systems to make sure they have the most sophisticated, latest protections in place. We've done that in Virginia. We've offered that. We're sharing that with all the other states. Best practices, you need to, we're the first state to stand up the NIST, the National Institute of Standard framework that the federal government put out. So there are frameworks that you as a state need to comply with, and we've already moved ahead to do it. The other big issue on cybersecurity, we got to fix our education system in America. In Virginia, I have 17,000 cyber jobs open right now, starting pay $88,000. So we need to do a better job on the workforce piece of it, not only for the protection piece, but as a governor, what an opportunity. The federal government's going to spend billions in this regard, private sector. I want to make sure that as governor of Virginia, I have 656 cyber companies. We're growing exponentially. I want that business in Virginia, but I can't get it unless I have a great workforce.
You are not allowed to poach people from Boston, by the way.
You tell Governor Baker I'm here spending money here helping the Massachusetts economy.
To your point, there's a growing cybersecurity industry right here in Massachusetts as well because of the demand, both in the public and the private sector.
Right.
So, I mean, if you're feeling the challenge right now and filling those jobs, I mean, what, are we going to have to wait 2, 4, 10 years before we catch up to the demand?
Well, I hope not. And let me just tell you, in Virginia, I'm now giving scholarships. If you're willing to work for the state government for 2 years, we'll pay for your cyber degree. We'll go ahead and do that. I have cyber camps going on, 35 of them every summer to bring kids in 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th grade to come in to spend 6 weeks learning about cyber. We've got to get our younger folks interested early on. I would tell every parent listening to this radio show, computer science, code writing, you know, you're too young. But there used to be a movie called The Graduate. The key phrase was plastics. Today, it's cyber. You can get a job $88,000 to $100,000. You don't need a 4-year degree either. You need more than high school. probably a community college cyber degree, and you can move right into the workforce with a high-paying salary.
Yeah. So what exactly, what kind of data are we talking about that states are particularly privy to or should be protecting? I mean, I can imagine there's obviously financial data with taxes, for example.
All your state taxes. You know, we manage our Medicaid, Medicare, so all of those health records, remember, that all runs through the states. So we have all the health information on all the citizens. I have 8.5 million citizens in Virginia. We have all those health records. We have, obviously, all the financial data for the state returns. But in addition, it's your businesses. But listen, Virginia is very unique. We have the largest naval base in the world, the Pentagon, the CIA, Quantico, where the Marines are, Oceana, Langley, huge assets, 27 military installations. So I have an additional burden because of the defense, intelligence, military issues.
But doesn't that burden belong to the federal government,
but
though?
We work hand in hand. My point, as I made earlier, if we as a state are not putting up those protections, we are a weak link. We've all got to do this together. So it's federal, state, private working together to protect ourselves. You cannot pick up a paper today and you have not read about a new cyber attack. Mm-hmm. Everybody ought to be doing everything they possibly can to make sure that, you know, the encryption is done on it. They need to make sure, even on their own emails. You got to have 2 passwords. I mean, you need to really start taking protections because you've seen how easy it is for people. The Democratic National Committee, as you remember, they got all their information hacked.
Yeah. So I'm curious. I mean, I take your point about you're only as secure as your weakest link. But I wonder, cyber being what it is and the Internet being what it is, I mean, hackers don't recognize borders. They don't necessarily. I mean, they care who they're targeting, but they're not targeting something because it's a state or because it's a company. So, I mean, shouldn't states can do what they can, but it doesn't the ultimate responsibility actually rest at a higher level? I mean, should governors be calling for the federal government to do more to provide security both for public and private internets?
And they are. And your servers, protecting the cloud. Let me just give an example. In Virginia today, just this year, 53 million cyber attacks into the Virginia system. We blocked 47,000 malware already this year. Now, out of the 53 million, about 108 were very serious. But if one of those 108 had gotten through, could have been cataclysmic. Utah, South Carolina in the last couple of years have already had major breaches of their state information. But the good news is, that's what this conference that we're doing with the National Governors Association, we're on top of it. We are bringing everybody together. I've given them a checklist. Within a year, everybody needs to have this done. But there are people who get out of bed every single day. Look at the healthcare companies. Look what's happening to them today. They're going in stealing health records. Then they're going to the healthcare company and saying, you either pay me X or you'll never get it back. They're holding records hostage and they're saying, well, you pay me with Bitcoin. This is going on every day. I mean, we get briefings from the FBI, the DHS. It's a whole new world out there today, and that's why we've all got to start taking it seriously. But folks listening to this radio show, you yourselves have to take some responsibility. Easy single passwords are easily hacked, and they can get all of your emails. They can get all your banking information. They can get your passwords to, you know, if you do online banking.
Well, so what about when the interests of making everyone and everything more secure, more cyber secure.
Yeah.
Actually, I mean, you're a public servant. You're governor of an important state. What about what happens when those interests are actually in opposition to what the government wants? I mean, in terms of, we just have a case going on right now, Whisper Systems. They make a very popular encryption app, and they received a subpoena for subscriber information. I mean, the more secure things get in a way, the tougher it is for the government to find information when it wants it and needs it.
Yeah, but listen, I will always come down on personal civil liberties. You know, I have a son who, a second lieutenant in the Marine Corps, who does intelligence work. You know, I listen to my son. He tells me things I need to do as a dad to protect my own information. But, you know, having the double passwords, and there are different Wicker and other things that you can use that assist you in doing it. I'm going to do everything I can as a private citizen. And it's not that anyone, you know, obviously do anything wrong on their emails, but there are times maybe something you wrote down gets interpreted 3 years from now that maybe you don't want out there. But at the end of the day, this is my private communication that I'm having with another individual. So it's incumbent upon me to do all the protections I can. But once they're into your system, once they've got your emails, what is to stop them? Credit card information, as you know. They can get into all your online banking information. This is happening every day. 53 million cyber attacks in Virginia so far in 2016.
Now, what about, one of the new hot areas of development is the Internet of Things, right? Like, pretty soon, everything we use on a day-to-day basis is going to have connectivity, right? Yeah. Pretty exciting future, but a lot of cybersecurity experts look at that as the potential weak link, where everything in our lives could get hacked. Do you have concerns about that?
Sure. Look at Johnson & Johnson, a great Boston company here, as you know. Yesterday, they put out a story that their insulin pumps are now susceptible to being hacked. Mm-hmm. So someone has done something with the system. So is it pacemakers next? Is it insulin pumps? We've got to do a better job. It's just exploded, the internet, as you know, and I have five children. They live on this internet all day. I keep telling them, put that device down, but whatever. The federal government, but as you know, there's privacy issues. As governor, the National Guard is under my control. I'd like to get more information from the federal government, indeed from the FBI or DHS, if there's a potential threat in my state and there's privacy issues. This is a very big, complex issue. But I go to the reason we're doing this conference. Virginia's done a great job. I think Michigan is out front on cyber protections. Five states just got an A from Digital States. I'm very proud. I just became the bio governor of the year, cyber governor of the year. We're making great progress in Virginia, but we need all 50 states to be doing what they're doing. If it happens in Virginia, I know when I go to bed at night that I've done everything I possibly can to protect our assets.
Yeah. Well, we're speaking with Virginia Governor Democrat Terry McAuliffe. He's in town for a regional summit of the National Governors Association, talking about states and cybersecurity. And Governor McAuliffe, while we have you, I just want to remind folks that obviously you were a very long-time Democrat. You were the head of the Democratic National Committee from
I'm old as dirt.
2001 to 2005. You don't look it.
Thank you.
In 2008, you were chair of Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign in that year.
Co-chaired Bill Clinton's campaign in 96.
So obviously you know
them. I've been with the Clintons a long time.
Yeah. So if you don't mind, I'd like to take the opportunity to ask you some questions about the election. But I don't really necessarily want to talk about politics or whatever's been happening in the 24-hour news cycle, because I'd love to get your thoughts on something deeper here. Whatever happens in November, I think we can just acknowledge, and it has been acknowledged, that something very important is happening in this country. There are a lot of people who may in the past have felt like they haven't been heard by their public servants, or for many years at least, and they want to be heard now. And many of them are aligning their votes with Donald Trump because of that. And I'm just wondering, this is an important challenge, I believe, for Hillary Clinton. Do you think she can convince those people that she hears them, that she's hearing them, and she can convince them authentically of that?
And I think that's the important issue in this election. She's going to win. I look at the numbers every day. She's going to win Virginia. I feel very comfortable about where we are. She's going to be the next president. But listen, President Obama's been in office for 8 years. And as you know, look at historically, after an administration has lasted 8 years, there's an inherent default to change. They just want to change. They just want something new. That exists out there today. And I think Donald Trump came along. In full disclosure, I've known the man for 20 years. He said things that if I said, I'd be wiped out of politics. But I think people are yearning for something new and something different. That's, part of the American political process. I have known Hillary for 36 years. I know her soul. We vacationed together, our families. I've seen her with my five children. I've seen her spend hours in a pool with one of my daughters who she's been dying to get out, but no, they kept playing more Marco Polo and other games. Listen, she is a loving, caring person. Sometimes that doesn't come through in the press. Loves issue discussion. Listen, this is a woman who could have done anything she wanted when she got out of law school. She didn't. She went to work for the Children's Legal Defense Fund. There's so many things Hillary could have done. She is what I love about her. And listen, this woman has been, and it is what it is, has been beaten up mercifully for years and years and years. But you know what? It doesn't bother her. She gets out of bed the next day, and what she always says to me, Terry, she says Mac is my nickname, it's not about me. It's about the people I'm fighting for.
Well, Governor, let me put a finer point on it.
Sure.
Because I was reading this remarkable article in the recent issue of The New Yorker, and it featured just conversations and profiles of a couple of voters from West Virginia, right next door to you, right? And it just sort of, I think it was a beautiful representation of the complex fabric that is the American electorate. And I just want to read a quote to you.
Sure.
For example, this quote comes from a man named Richard Ojeda. His grandfather was a Mexican immigrant, and Richard Ojeda himself served in the Army for 24 years. He's an Iraq and Afghanistan veteran. He's running for state senate in West Virginia as a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
And he told The New Yorker that he thinks voting for Trump actually makes sense to him for this reason. He said to the magazine, if we're going to go spend trillions of dollars into debt over Iraq, why can't we go billions of dollars in debt and make every single coal-producing plant clean in West Virginia? Don't we deserve a hand? So I'm just wondering, why do you think Hillary Clinton isn't reaching or convincing someone like Richard Ojeda, who is a Democrat?
Yeah, and I think, listen, Hillary has apologized. She made a statement that she'd made that she'd her point that she was making is the coal industry in this country is in very tough shape. In order to rebuild it, you've got to move away from coal into renewables and other things. That is the future. I have the same issue I deal with Southwest Virginia. I have about 4 million workers in Virginia total. Do you know how many work in the coal business directly? 1,100. This is a business for many reasons. They like to blame President Obama. This has been a historical downward trend. China's no longer buying our coal. And you have the explosion of natural gas. The future in Southwest Virginia and in West Virginia is to create these new technologies, these new jobs of what I call the 21st century, renewable energy. They ought to be building wind turbines and blades in West Virginia. But this is the program that Hillary's put out. Donald Trump has not put that program out. Donald Trump has said that he thinks it's smart not to pay any taxes. This gentleman you referenced was in the military.
Hmm.
Well, what if everybody had Donald Trump's opinion and didn't pay their taxes? We have to pay our taxes. It is a patriotic thing to do. So, listen, she's going to win. She's laid out a plan. She's got a 5-point plan on how to get the economy going. I know her personally. That's why I'm so passionate about her winning. I mean, Donald Trump has gone through this campaign insulting women, insulting African Americans, insulting Muslims, telling Muslims you can't come to our country, putting a wall up in Mexico. You cannot insult your way into the White House. And it wants to give nuclear arms to Japan and these other countries. I mean, come on, step back for a minute. I think, you know, people talk about Trump new ideas. This man would be dangerous. I can tell you, as a parent who has a son in the military, I speak for a lot of parents who have children in the military.
Yeah.
This man would scare us to death. He does not have the temperament to be president of the United States. He clearly, after he attacked the Khan family, whose son was killed, saving other soldiers, he disparaged this family, who happened to be from Charlottesville, Virginia. This man does not have the temperament to be commander-in-chief. She does. She's been Secretary of State. She's been First Lady. She's been a United States Senator.
Well, so I definitely hear your passion and your support for Secretary Clinton. But I do want to ask you one last question about the Democratic Party itself, because, I mean, you were the top guy in the party. And there's been a lot of talk this election cycle about the future of the Republican Party, right? Because, you know, will it be the party of Trump? Will it be something else? Like, there's been a lot of conversation. But I want to ask that question of the Democratic Party, because, you know, basically under the leadership of President Bill Clinton and you as DNC chair for all those years in the early 2000s, the Democratic Party became the party that mastered the art of centrism, triangulation, embraced globalization as both an economic and cultural force. I'm wondering about the future of that Democratic Party, because are there aspects of what the Democrats are or what the Democratic Party is that the party itself needs to overcome in order to embrace, again, I use the word authentically, the concerns and the needs and the voices of these millions of people who are supporting Donald Trump, who have maybe more complex ideas of, you know, what they want for America.
What do you want in your elected official? I ran for governor. I won. I broke a 44-year trend to win that job as governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia. I ran a very unique campaign. I was the first candidate, I believe, statewide to come out for marriage equality in the South. That is not something normally runs on. I told the NRA they can go jump off a cliff. That is not something you normally run on in Virginia. I told women I'd be a brick wall to protect their rights because we have some horrible onerous legislation to try and shut down our women's health clinics. I also said I will be the most pro-growth governor in Virginia history, all about the economy. And here I sit here today. I won. I just announced the lowest unemployment rate of any major state in the United States of America. It was 5.4 when I became governor. It's 3.9 today. It's the steepest drop in 32 years. Why? Open and welcoming to everybody. You treat everybody with dignity and respect. And I believe that's what the Democratic Party is. It is not who Donald Trump is. And I think what has hurt the Republican Party in this nation today is this attitude toward LGBT members, the constant social agenda. These Republicans constantly always want to be in your bedroom. And I always say to folks, my job is to create jobs, make Virginia open and welcoming to everybody. And
but a lot of these people who are voting for Trump don't feel like the Democratic Party is welcoming to them.
Listen, what do they listen to? What do they not listen to? It's a very complex. And at the end of the day, I'll tell you right now, I think Hillary wins. I bet you she wins somewhere around 320 electoral votes when people begin to finally make their decision. That's my prediction today. You need 270. We'll see what happens. But I am a fiscally conservative pro-business Democrat. I'm socially progressive as heck. I'm just a huge believer. Leave people alone. Grow the economy. And you know what? It's working in Virginia. I'm popular today. People go into the basic question you asked her. What do they want? They want a job that pays them well. They can educate their children. They can have a health care plan. If they get sick, they're not going to be financially wiped out. They want to be able to get on a road that works without potholes and bridges that don't collapse. American public just want to get that shot. And I believe that Hillary and Tim Kaine are the ones that are putting that shot out for them. I think that's what people want. And Donald Trump doesn't offer that. He doesn't believe you ought to pay your taxes. He has insulted everybody. He has not laid out an agenda of where he wants to take this country. And Hillary, in fairness, has.
Well, Terry McAuliffe.
And the first woman president of the United States of America. I'm sorry. With three young daughters, I want my daughters saying, yes, I too can be president of the United States.
Terry McAuliffe is the governor of the great state of Virginia, the Commonwealth of Virginia. He's in town in Boston today for a summit of the National Governors Association talking about cybersecurity. And he joined us here in the Radio Boston studio. Governor McAuliffe, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for the opportunity.
We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.